Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a week of home Oriole baseball and our final Crab Cake Tour before the 4th of July. Take a little respite this week. We will not be at Fadley's on Friday, but you can be at Fadley's on Friday for what will be a big Joan Jett weekend. It goes without saying that I love rock and roll. I had a great rock and roll experience that I'm going to talk about at some point in this segment with Greg Hawks, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer of the Cars, of Athelton High School, of Howard County. Learned tons about Greg Hawks. He is appearing on Saturday night with a band called Eddie Japan down in Ramsett, Annapolis. So be on the lookout for that this week. We've got a lot of baseball happening this week. Luke, I will be at Pappas on Tuesday giving these Gold Rush 7 doublers away. I don't know where the Orioles are going to be in all of this. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions putting us out on the road. Jiffy Lube Multicare helping us get these wise conversations out. And look, man, there's been a lot of praise here specifically for the Orioles. On the field, if not off the field in various ways, I think we both have our skepticism about the new owner. I have some inside skepticism about the new owner. But it's been 96% praise here. And the rest of the criticism has been more about the structure of the bullpen and pitching and when they're bringing young players up and when they hit the gas and when they hit the brakes on Mullins and Hayes and different guys. But when you're winning every night and even the Yankees feel good of what happened in the Bronx last week, you know, you measure the season, all-star break, we'll measure it in a couple of weeks and say, boy, that series in St. Louis and that one down in Houston. They're not as bad as they looked over the weekend. They're not falling apart. You know, I'm not buying all of that. But that said, they didn't hit the ball. And the pitching is what you and I would be concerned the pitching would be if we knew Means and Bradish and Wells were all taking knives before, like, you know, it got hot out.
Yeah, look, if anyone's expecting me to go on the air after a three-game sweep and start pressing the panic button and saying this stinks and that stinks, I mean, that's, you know me, that's not my style anyway. This was way worse than the St. Louis series. I don't think there's any question about that. That was more of a weird, you know, you had some weather delays, you know, John Means gets hurt that series. They had a chance to win all those games. Whereas this was a largely pretty non-competitive series. I mean, until late Friday night where they're down, what, 11 runs and they score a bunch of runs to make it semi-interesting in the ninth inning. But other than that, it was not a very competitive series. I think, frankly, it felt like a letdown. It felt like a weekend where, you know, they didn't play well, obviously. Are they tired? I mean, look, it's not a free pass. You know, it's not a get-out-of-jail-free card, but we have talked a lot about this stretch of lack of off days. They've had challenges to their pitching over that stretch from a health standpoint. Obviously, this last turn through the rotation was ugly, including Grayson Rodriguez and Corbin Burns not pitching well. So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to tell me those guys aren't going to pitch well on top of the questions they already have, they're probably going to have a bad series when that comes to pass. So, you know, I don't think it's a panic time whatsoever. I think it's, you know, we're so accustomed to this team playing not just good baseball, but great baseball. I mean, we're, you know, we were talking Sunday afternoon, 72 hours removed from the thrill of Thursday afternoon's game in the Bronx, where, you know, you and I are at Costas Inn and everyone's feeling great, cozied up at the bar, watching the Orioles blow out the Yankees, and life is good.
We had a lady sitting there eating crabs, just screaming. You're wearing her Oriole stuff, just screaming at, you know,
yeah,
the television.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But it was a reminder that, boy, this game can humble you quickly. And, I mean, look, the Yankees lost the series over the weekend, too. I mean, that's probably the best – the saving grace of the weekend was that the Yankees lost 2 out of 3. So you only lost a game in the standings. But, yeah, it was an ugly weekend. I'm not going to sit here and try to sugarcoat it. Whether they're tired or not, hey, you got to play, right? I mean, again, no one's going to feel sorry for you. And we've talked about that for a month and a half now as far as the stretch. And they've played extremely good baseball despite the lack of off days over the last 5-6 weeks. But they better recover quickly, because Cleveland's coming to town. Texas is coming to town after that. The Rangers are feeling better about themselves here of late, despite a rough start to the season for the defending champs. So there's no time to lick your wounds. There's no time to feel sorry for yourself. There's no time to be tired, quite frankly. You have to turn the page and move past this series. And I think they will, because that's something that this team's done a good job of. You mentioned the St. Louis series. It's strange just to think that they've been swept twice now in just over a month. But I'll also remind, they went 20-7 between those two series. So it's not as though they've been struggling, overall. So, I think you have to take it for what it was, which was an ugly weekend, but it was just a weekend. But clearly the pitching, with the injuries, with all the conjecture and discourse about, where the bullpen is, where the starting rotation is right now, when's Dean Kramer coming back, Kyle Bradish and John Means aren't walking through that door. I don't think a reminder was necessary, but it is a reminder of what happens when you don't pitch well. And then to your point, Friday night's late inning effort notwithstanding, they didn't swing the bats at all on Saturday or Sunday. So, Houston's been playing better of late. I think we know that that's an Astros team that's still very, very talented. I think, you and I even mentioned it in passing at a few points over the first couple months of the season, with them being off to such a bad start. But, the Orioles went into Houston and got their feelings hurt. So, it kind of is what it is. And you come back home and you have to regroup and turn the page. And as Brandon Hyde said in the post game, flush that series, because there's not a whole lot of redeeming qualities to take from that series, quite frankly. So just an ugly weekend. And the fact that it stands out so much as, I don't know if alarming is the right word, but certainly surprising, that just speaks to how good this team has been the last couple of years, because these even a series like this, these types of series have been just so few and far between because they have played so well over the last 2 years.
Luke is here. We'll be at Pappas in Parkville. I want to say that again because I didn't say where we were going to be. Make sure you don't think we're in Timonium or Cockeysville area or up in Bel Air or down in Glen Burnie. We're going to be at the Original on Tuesday for our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I guess the biggest question now, when you say something like Bradish isn't walking through that door, and I'm thinking, we haven't said that hasn't totally sunk in. It's there, but it doesn't sink into the third, fourth, fifth time through the rotation. And you're not playing 650 ball anymore. You're just trying to play 525 ball, and you're just trying to get through it. And when I mean that, I mean this week where a bad week, and you don't want to turn it into a bad week. And look, this isn't, the White Sox getting off the bus here, right? The Guardians have been among the best teams in baseball, playing great baseball. I'm going out to Cleveland this week a little bit to learn a little bit more about what's on their mind. I thought they were just thinking Browns. Who knew that they'd be thinking about World Series? But even John Martin, who from the Maryland Lottery, who's our resident old school Cleveland, just talking about them, they're experiencing something there that we're experiencing here. And then Texas comes in, bad start, but they flew a flag and got rings. And you mentioned Grayson Rodriguez having a bad start. Well, you don't get a whole lot of chances to wash those ghosts out of Texas last year. Certainly for you and I going down there, we had a nice trip. We had some good barbecue, and then they laid a turd, and, we had our press credentials threatened, and we got out of there. And, they haven't seen Texas in that way where, Texas is going to come in. It's hot. Let's see how the Cleveland thing goes, but you got to make sure you're not 2-8 this week, or, 0-3. Okay. After New York, but you start to segment these things and say, here come these good teams. Here comes the hot weather. This is a week you don't want to go real upside down. This is a week you got to get home and get corrective on all of this. But to your point, it's not going to get corrective with Bradish. It's going to have to get corrective with next time Burns is out, next time Rodriguez is out, and how do we survive Povich, who we didn't really want to bring up anyway. He'd still be in Norfolk had the tea leaves written, been the right way. If Means and Bradish were here, he'd be the trade bait. I don't know, but not. And they have to figure this out and make this work. And this is where, like, the really smart guys like you, as we get up on 5 weeks out on trading deadline, this is where a lot of our conversations after losses, specifically after wins last week, beat the Yankees, everything's cool, it feels like it's going to be together. But I think you and I and really smart people in the room know that they need to get better with their pitching. Just in general, they need to find something they don't have here yet. And how they're going to find that, how they're going to deal, that's really going to define the season as much as Bradish getting hurt or Wells not being available or, you know, even Hayes and Mullins not being the biggest part of what they're doing right now. And Henderson and Rutschman and all these guys that are phenoms continuing to be phenoms. They weren't over the weekend. But the pitching side of this is where we're all concerned, where we're all sort of focused and watching it. And to me, it's going to come from outward, not inward. I'm not expecting big things from the bottom of this rotation. When I get good things, great, but I'm not expecting Cole Irvin's ERA to, you know, hover at 2 or 2.5 the rest of the way. And a little more worried about Rodriguez with all the things you talk about innings and wear and tear and where he is and how he's never really stood up and been a bulldog of a guy. He's a young guy, but he's never going to be a 230-inning guy. They're not going to let him be that guy. So what's he going to be? And, yeah, I'm worried about all of it as the weather heats up and they come home this week, because they really come home with big, not just Joan Jett, but big expectations that this homestand's going to right things. And they always have before. They always have before.
Well, and you just kind of said it. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and sound the panic alarm. I'm just not. This team's been too good for too long to feel that way. Now, your points about the pitching, we've talked about the pitching. I'm not as concerned about Grayson Rodriguez just because he didn't pitch well Friday night. And to your point, he was a hell of a bulldog against the Phillies last weekend at a time where they really needed it. So, you know, let's not, and I'm not suggesting you were, because I think
saying once you start bulldogging, that bulldog mentality is not going to apply to him given injuries in the past and given where they're going to put him out there. That's all.
Okay. Fair enough. But who are you going to acquire that they're going to do that with? You know what I mean? Like I think that's just the era that we're living in, right? I mean,
but part of giving him and Burns and some other guys a gentle touch once they're 20 starts into the season and it's 100 degrees out and they're playing every day, part of the gentle touch of let's go six man, let's give you an extra day, let's push you a day is who are we pushing in? That wasn't a problem in May, and it wasn't something we've even said out loud. We're only saying it out loud because they lost three pitchers in a month.
Yeah. And keep in mind, they are winding down this stretch of very few off days. So they'll have more off days. They have the All-Star break coming up. So I don't know if there's really a need for a six man, but come August, that might be a different conversation. And that's why we've talked so much about the trade deadline. So, I mean, look, pitching is fragile. We've talked about this over and over and over. I talked about this a lot. One of the big reasons the Orioles were able to overtake the Rays, and this is taking nothing away from the Orioles, remember all the pitching injuries the Rays had. It was kind of a similar time of year. It was, you know, they lost McClanahan and some other guys. And I mean, it really added up for them to the point where they were still really good the rest of the way, but the Orioles were better. And I think the health of their pitching or the lack of health of their pitching compared to the Orioles staying as healthy as they did pitching wise last year proved to be the difference. Now, I'll point this out. Take a look at the Yankees right now. Anthony Rizzo's on the IL. Giancarlo Stanton just went on the IL. Now, I know those aren't pitchers, and obviously they just welcomed Gerrit Cole back, as we saw firsthand in the Bronx. But one of the big questions that I had, and I know a lot of people had, as it pertains to this division race and the Yankees, was they're a very veteran-laden club, with some of their bats in their lineup. Are they going to hold up? You know, is that going to last over 6 months? And here recently, we've seen them have some injuries. So the point is, look, attrition is part of the season. And I don't sit here making excuses for Mike Elias or for the Orioles. Could they have added more from a pitching standpoint beyond just making the Corbin Burns trade over the offseason? Yeah, they could have. But at the same time, they had a transition in ownership. John Angelos wasn't spending any money. That was evident over the last few years. Will David Rubenstein spend money? I have no idea. You know, I think we all assume that, but until we see it, we don't know. So Point is, yeah, there were opportunities in the offseason to add more pitching, and they didn't do it. So, you know, it is what it is. They've lost the guys that they've lost, and now it's a case of trying to figure out who the buyers and who the sellers are going to be when it comes to pitching. Because, yeah, they're going to need at least one starting pitcher, and I think they're going to need probably a couple bullpen arms. You know, if you're really looking at this thing through the lens of trying to optimize your team, trying to really fortify your chances here. That said, and I saw someone make the point, I can't remember who it was. I saw it on Twitter or, you know, social media late Sunday night. Any World Series team you look at, and we talk about this a lot in the NFL with the salary cap, right? Understanding that your roster building is always going to have some level of limitations to it. A World Series champion is not going to have a perfect roster, most likely. You know, I think you look back at the last 10 years, even with considering payroll and how much teams spend and all that.
Dude, I know you were young in 83, but, you know, Todd Cruz was part of that team.
Right, right.
Floyd Rayford, right? I mean, like, come on. Yeah.
I mean, look at the Rangers last year. Look, I know they got with Eovaldi and Jordan Montgomery doing what they did, but who was their third starter? And I'm not talking about Max Scherzer coming back and pitching later in the postseason. Who was their third starter? People probably don't even remember who it was right now. It's not as though they had this dominant lockdown bullpen. Now, I'm not saying that to disparage the Rangers last year. The point is, that wasn't a perfect baseball team by any stretch of the imagination. So what I'm saying
here— Well, you want
here,
it to be healthy and well-constructed in October,
no doubt.
Not in June, right?
Well, and that's part of this. But so much of this is also, how healthy are you? And two, how well are you playing? I mean, Arizona was a great example of this. Arizona was very mediocre last year. Very mediocre. Go look at what, you know, we remember what their regular season record was. They started playing well late in the season, and then they rolled that into October. And guess what? They went out and spent a bunch of money this offseason even. And they're mediocre again. So a lot of this, you know,
that's baseball if you've been a fan most of your life.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
you remember how much money the Yankees used to spend and how much money various teams have spent. The Tigers just,
yeah,
you know, over budget to win. Even Peter here, you know, back in the day with the David Segees and the Jeff. Like, that doesn't ring the bell. Going out and doing it and staying healthy while you do it is what rings the bell.
Yeah, and we've seen this now with a number of examples, including the Orioles last year. You can win 100 plus games and October doesn't really care. It really doesn't care. You get to October and you get the wrong matchup, or you get in a slump at the wrong time, especially with these 3-game wild card series. So look, we're getting ahead of ourselves with that, but part of that point is the Orioles are in really good position right now. I think we all would agree with that. Now, we could debate whether they're going to win the AL East or overtake the Yankees or whatever, but they're 20-plus games over 500 before the All-Star break. You know, back in April, regardless of what was going to happen, if someone just asked, hey, would you sign up for being 49-28 at the conclusion of the Houston series entering the final week in June? I think anyone would have signed up for that without knowing any of the variables. You would have said, yeah, I'll take that. So they're in great shape. We're going to see about the pitching. Mike Elias has what, five and a half weeks until the trade deadline to make moves. I think it's still very difficult figuring out who exactly the sellers are. I mean, you can go, you know, people have talked about the White Sox pitchers, and I get that. You know, the White Sox are 35, 37, 40 games under 500. They're going to be sellers. Okay. So we know that. That said, they have some younger pitchers that still have club control that they might try to hold on to because you just don't know. But I'll use the Cardinals. A few weeks ago, you and I were mentioning, hey, maybe the Orioles bring Kyle Gibson back. Cardinals are in the midst of the wild card race right now. So, I mean, who exactly?
And that'll change with three or four teams in the next 4 weeks,
yeah,
between now and the All-Star break.
Teams right.
will go 2-8 and 3-11, and other teams will catch fire, and fire for
yeah.
them is 13-8. There's yeah. five games, you know what I mean? The fires a couple of games over 500 over the next month. I mean, the Orioles have been very consistent, and
yeah.
and we've never seen anything like it. And I think the expectations of them winning the World Series in June are too high, because you can't win the World Series
right.
in June. You could only win the World Series in November. So I'm patient through this, but I am seeing the boat hit some rocks a
yeah.
little bit. and they've always managed to push off because they have players that can do that, and they have the ability to score seven runs in a ninth inning when the game's already over with. And as my dad would say, save some of those runs for the weekend. He would have said that in the Bronx on Thursday, that they looked like the greatest team on earth Friday when you and I were, you know, we didn't even do a piece after Thursday. We did a piece on Willie Mays, and people can go listen to that. We did that over Costas on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And it feels like we should have spiked the ball a little more on Friday morning, because it is rarefied air when you go into New York and you just beat the pants out of them on the last day and you're feeling that good. But boy, what a thud. And probably a good little lesson for the young men of the Orioles in, hey, remember that plane ride down to Houston? Yeah, that was fun, wasn't it? Yeah. Then what happened? Maybe we came home, we had to play the Guardians on Monday. It was 95 degrees, and we're looking up at a weekend donut, and Luke and Esther saying, hey, what's wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it's, and again, some of this is indeed just baseball, right? I mean, you mentioned the 1983 Orioles a couple of moments ago. That team had 2 7-game losing streaks, and they won the World Series, and they've won, what, 98 games that year. So
we weren't even born. What the hell do you know about summer 83? Come on.
But it's just, you know, again, this feeling as surprising as it did. And look, I was surprised too. I wasn't expecting them to go down to Houston and get swept and it'd be pretty ugly.
But you're never expecting them to get swept, but you know they are at some point. And if they are, it's going to be something like this.
Well, and that's the thing. They had that, as much as I made fun of that streak at the end of it because of continuing to count it because of the you know, the postseason sweep to Texas and how it just felt disingenuous. That was still such a weird statistical outlier to go that long without being swept. So now when it happens twice in roughly a month's time,
which
as
it
I
happens to everybody else twice in a month's
exactly.
time or twice. Right.
And some of it's just how are the games distributed, right? I mean, okay, they've been swept twice. They also went 20-7 between those two sweeps. So if you're going to tell me your season's going to be laid out that way, where okay, you're going to be swept every month, but you'll go 20-7 in between those sweeps, I'll sign up for that, right? I mean, you're going to be a 100+ win team, you know, or way over that. So it's just the timing of it, because yeah, they were feeling so good about themselves. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say these guys were cocky or overconfident or, you know, again, some of it's just, it's baseball, and Houston is still a team that is formidable, even with some of the injuries they've had. It's still a team that I expect to make a run, at least for a wild card, even if they're not going to necessarily catch the Mariners, although there's still plenty of time for them to do that. So, you know, we shouldn't be shocked in terms of the potential for something like this to happen. For me, it's very much about the response now. It was right around this time last year, if you recall, you know, about a week out from a year. But remember, the Orioles had that stretch where I think they were playing, what, Cincinnati, and then they go to Houston, or they go to New York. They lost 6 out of 7. And people really thought, okay, well, this is a young team coming back to earth. All right, they got off to a great start. They're still a wild card contender, and they still have a good chance to make the playoffs. But I think there was very much a thought of, ooh, this is really starting to go sideways. And then they played out of their minds for 3 or 4 weeks right after that. So that's what
this is a young team when I look at Henderson, Rutschman,
it is,
and Westberg and these guys against the grain.
It
and
is.
When I look of even Santander and Hayes and Mullins, these guys haven't won anything. They haven't won a playoff game.
Yeah.
None of them. Like, so
that's
the
truth.
Know, it's still really, this is still, the proof is still out there to be proven for all of them.
Yeah.
You know, Grayson Rodriguez is in the Hall of Potential. You know what I mean? And they all are. And, but, you know, these kinds of setbacks are what define them to come home, as I pointed out a minute ago. And Cleveland's coming in. They think they're good, too. They win a lot. And Texas is coming in. And they had your number last year for sure. And they need to play better. See how they all handle this. Second time around with Texas. First time around after this kind of a weekend. Let's see how the bats go at home. Let's see how home cooking serves up. Let's see how the fans come out. Let's see if there's rain delays or not. And, you know, like how taxing a week this is going to be. Because they like it at home.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you brought up a point, and this is something I wanted to emphasize a little bit as we're talking about the pitching, as we're trying to see what Mike Elias is going to do, what he isn't going to do, who's he going to trade, who isn't he going to trade, all of that. You know, we focus so much on the pitching side. To me, this week and perhaps the next 3 or 4 weeks, as you know, we figure out what exactly their move, what move they're going to make. You know, you want to make the right trade. You don't want to make the first trade. You want to make the right trade, and you want to do what's best for your organization that's going to help you right now. But you also want to keep yourself well positioned for the next couple of years. And that might also include, hey, you're going to trade for a starter who has a year or two of club control left. And yeah, you might give up more in prospects, but then that makes next year look better, not knowing if Kyle Bradish will pitch at all, if Corbin Burns is going to be here, all those different questions that
we'll
get
to.
Yeah,
you and I would be very skeptical of anything that is another Corbin Burns, right? At the end of the year, they'd have to rip this up because they don't have a cavalry waiting. The cavalry's all getting sewn up.
I mean, they have other guys in their system, but they don't. Yeah, I mean, right now.
I'm talking opening day next year. Who pitches if Rodriguez gets hurt right now?
Well, okay. I mean, if you keep losing pitchers, there's not going to be anything you can do. I mean, at some point in time.
But Burns is a guy that we're looking at and saying, not going to be able to afford him no matter how well it goes.
I mean, they can afford him. It's a matter of whether Mike Elias is going to deem that a good investment. And that's the point I've continued to come back to, even if David Rubenstein says, hey,
it remained all of this Rubenstein stuff based on the way I've been
conjecture.
Treated and based on him coming in and the mystery around him doing anything other than just throwing hats out at people at this point. Right. I mean, we haven't seen a decision made, and it, you know, I don't want to say it's getting late early. They're winning a lot of games or selling tickets, whatever they're going to do. But like the big decisions that big shot journalists like you and former journalists like me ask about is the money, is the commitment, is the how bad do you want to win, is the how much value do you put on the young players in a stock sense of being a businessman to say the young guys are gold, we're not dealing them no matter what because we can get them on the cheap for 5 years, and that's the only way this is going to work in this market. We've done the financial work on this. That's the only way it's going to. Tampa's done that, and they said that's the only way it's going to work for us. That's the way we're going to have to play. I don't know how they're going to play here, but I've seen no pronouncement of that, and I don't know. I no offense to you or anybody else with a press credential, but I'm the only one forcing that, you know, out loud. And I don't know that any of you with press credentials are going to be given access to ask questions about philosophically other than him talking to his roommates and teammates and people that are under his employ, like Kevin Brown on a broadcast. But like, hey, dude, what's your philosophy on this? You know what I mean? Yep. Like, and we're going to judge that out loud the same way we judge Eric DaCosta's draft picks in real time, because these decisions are going to be made in real time, whether there's accountability or answers or being upfront about it or how they're going to be different than Angelo's. But we're going to see this in real time the next 5 weeks. And my monocles are out on this one, you know, like I'm like, you know, like watching this and saying, how are things different? Because if they're different, this incredible treasure chest of a farm system either will be everybody will want to pick it apart, or Elias will say that's too much, like he did last year with Jackson Holliday and Dylan Cease. You know, this is where you and I take a deeper dive into the philosophy of what they're trying to do and how it's allegedly going to be different than it's been the last 30 years.
Yeah, well, and that's where, you know, for me, the big piece that's really interesting here, and then I want to go back to a point I was trying to make just about the current club and as it's presently constructed. But, you know, a big question for me at this trade deadline and then obviously moving forward is what are the realities that Rubenstein envisions in terms of the payroll? Because there are more deals out there for you to be made if you're willing to take on salary, you're willing to take on contractual commitment and not just cheap controllable starters or someone that's just in the final 2 months of their contract and they're a rental. You know, that opens it up, because for me, that question really determines how much are you going to pick apart your farm system in dealing. And that's where, you know, I look at this and say, okay, you're going to be willing to spend more on the open market. And as you get into the off season and subsequent off seasons, then you can be a little more aggressive with your prospects. But if that's not the case, and Mike Elias is working from a tighter budget as he has the last few years, and look, I've never gotten the sense that Mike Elias is ever sat behind closed doors. Now, it's not to say he wouldn't spend more, but I've never gotten the sense that Mike Elias was frustrated in that sense that he would go out and hand out a bunch of free agent contracts. I don't think that's how philosophically he feels is the best way to build a long-term winner. I think he really feels
with or without cash, you're saying.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Ravens.
If he were running the Dodgers, he wouldn't be spending like a drunk sailor.
I don't know about that. I mean, that's tough to say because Andrew Freeman was.
Dude, another $30 million on the payroll would buy you Burns, right? Like, well, would buy you another player, right?
But I guess my point is, it's laying a foundation that they obviously laid over the last 4 or 5 years, with drafting, with player development, with guys like Ryan O'Hearn, who were, cash acquisitions, not much cash though, obviously. I think through that lens, it's, where does Elias's philosophy and his vision align with what David Rubenstein and the new ownership group does? So, that's a big question. That's the unknown right now. We assume more. They're going to spend more. They already have spent more than they did last year or the year before.
We're all optimistic because it's been such an issue for 30 years that anything new and this guy throwing out hats and squirting people and hiding from people like me still. And like, here we are. Come on, dude, you own the team. Let's make things different. Let's be different. You want to be different? Come answer some questions and give me the plan. Like, at some point we're going to – don't make me guess the plan. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what's the – You say you're transparent. You took $600 million from the government. You paid $1.8 billion for the team. What's the plan? The plan from Luke's question is, how are you spending on players? And that's 80% of the question. The other 20% of the question is, what are you really doing here? What's the big plan? Is the big plan to sell the team 5 years from now for $3.4 billion and just cash out and have a good time and give away hats for a few years? Is it to resurrect the city, which is that other 20%? But the baseball side of it is, what's the baseball plan? What's the budget? Yeah. What's going on with the television network? Are you going to get untangled with the Nationals? Are we going to get an all-star game here? Like, all of that sort of ownership stuff of, what are you going to do with this $600 million? Yeah. Bill Cole and I have committed this week to take that survey. They sent a survey out. I haven't taken it yet. They said it's a very fast survey. We'll see. I went one question into it. I'm like, time out. I'm going to do this as shtick on the air. So I'm going to do it with Bill. But like, it's been 90 days. Like, but the transparency part, I'm beginning to question as to whether they're going to answer questions and whether they're going to give a plan at all, or whether the way it's always been run with Greg Bader and John Angelos is going to still be okay. Because part of this is the interest in the trade thing the next 5-6 weeks, they could be more educational with the fans to make it more fun for the fans too, by giving some sort of level of, hey, we're new here. We want to win the World Series, and we're going to stand up, and we're going to do I don't know. I don't know. I don't get the sense that Elias is running this, to your point, any differently than he would have run it with John. You're talking about them picking up money into the future with guys that can pitch next opening day, and I'm hearing that too. But in the past, they didn't have enough money around here to get a Verlander or a Scherzer, a doctor, like a 38-year-old Curt Schilling, Randy Johnson, like that kind of guy, because it would have cost them $15 million to rent the guy for 10 weeks. And they didn't want to spend that, so we're talking about taking on $20 or $30 or $50 million into the future of some other contract for a pitcher who's 3 years into a 5-year deal. We never had any money to do anything here. So I think the confidence level of, hey, dude, you're at least going to be able to do that if Elias finds some Kyle Gibson that all you have to do is pay $4 million to over the next 8 weeks, and you'll at least have a pitcher. Are you committed to that? I think they're committed to that. But around here, that would be all we, and I'm going back 40 years, dude. I'm going Craig Lefferts. I'm going Lonnie Smith skates. I'm going, all of the effort of all of the years. They've never taken on salary in August, because they've always been bad enough that they've never had to. Like, they've never been the dealer in this kind of thing to say, Yeah, I mean, we made money this year. We sold 30,000 tickets last week. The way Peter would think is, we can afford another, we can add $15 or $20 million in player in August and September to try to fortify October, because you're going to be asked to do that too. You're talking like fleecing the system and paying into the future. In the past, we didn't even have enough money to rent players for 8 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking off the top of my head. I mean, Bobby Bonilla was making money when they traded for him in 1995. I mean, most of their deals, and look, I would venture to guess that most deals you see at the trade deadline are of more the rental variety, right? Especially in this day and age where you've got three wild cards. Even if a team sells 1 year, that doesn't mean that they're entering a multi-year rebuild, right? So, but there's a lot of unknown there. And I think if you're willing to take on some salary, and look, I'm not, this isn't me saying go out there and trade for a terrible contract. This is me saying if there's a pitcher out there who is signed for next year or signed for maybe a year after that, but probably more in the sign for this year and 25, that's not going to be a crazy financial commitment, especially with where they are right now with their guys that are either pre-arbitration or just entering arbitration, where that's not going to drastically alter your payroll plan for the next 5 years.
Look what
But,
Eovaldi did for the Rangers last year. And he would have been a guy that, if the Orioles would
well, I
have
mean, they could
brought
have
him in,
signed him.
we probably would have sneezed at it. I mean, at the time, and he was a difference maker for them,
Sure.
against us, against Arizona. I'm look, man, it's not crystal ballish, but it is, where's your level of financial commitment right now?
Yeah.
And what's your appetite to deal out of your system if you feel like Cade Povich is gold, even if he's a number four starter, because you ain't going to have to pay him the next couple of years, and you're going to get 160, 180 innings out of him in the way that they probably feel about Dean Kramer. They know he's never going to be, front line, but if he can get the post, gets back and gets healthy, what would their appetite be to get that kind of guy and pay $8 million to rent him in August and September? Because John A. would have balked at the $8 million, let alone whatever Ortiz you would give away. I mean, I'm only going back to Miller. Andrew Miller is an example of giving and getting, right? I mean,
Yeah.
in a not the modern era, we're still going back 10, 12 years, but like, that era, they did make a move like that, and that was one that cost them a Rodriguez that this ownership may say, whoa, we're not dealing Povich,
Well,
because that's basically what you'd be talking about right now.
yeah, and this is why I said though, the will for me, the willingness to go out and get someone who is making some money, which that obviously impacts the overall equation of what you're giving up. That's what I've been talking about here, where, I'm hoping you're being able to deal from a position of strength from a standpoint of, okay, yes, we have prospects to deal. We don't want to just give these guys away. We don't want to just start hemorrhaging our farm system to just start hemorrhaging talent. And then suddenly, we've upgraded our team, but not so much. But what's this going to mean for next year, the year after that, and the year after that? Which Elias
Well,
has
Mr.
always thought.
Rubenstein may say, I'm 74 years old. We bought the team and we have Corbin Burns, and I ain't paying him $180 million next year. So let's win now. Ain't no
Well, and
tomorrow.
that's.
Let's win now. And maybe John Angelos is still involved in this because Greg Bader is. And maybe he's saying, hey, man, we got one chance. I'm hanging on to win this year because my family ain't even going to own the team next year. Maybe John, but I don't know. I mean, I think behind the scenes here, this is real serious business for all of them because they're probably not going to have Burns next year, right? I mean, and then we're
Probably
always
not.
going to be asking about their pitching because they're probably buying a pitcher like him on the market, off the market, or growing one. If Rodriguez becomes one, there comes a point where it gets expensive.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this team's going to get expensive one way or the other
Fair
at some
enough.
point in time, right? So it's again, what path are you picking to navigate that? Are you going to start spending more? Do you get to a position where you're like Tampa, where your guys that your homegrown guys are getting closer and closer to free agency? Yeah. Hopefully you extend some of those guys, but you might flip some of those other guys. I mean, that's what Tampa has done. That's been the model for the Rays. I'm not saying the Orioles are going to be that or should be that, but you have to figure out how to navigate that. But You know, again, the financial piece of this is inevitable in terms of it's going to become more expensive, whether it's acquiring pitching, whether it's going out and signing something. You know, guys that you trade in your system that you're projecting to be a starter a year or two from now, if you then trade them for a pitcher, you might need to go sign someone at that position. So that's all of it. Last point I want to make, because I jumped around this and then we got into David Rubenstein. Where the Orioles are right now, meaning today, between today and whenever they start acquiring pitching on the trade market, because they're going to make moves. Whether we like those moves, whether those moves work out, those are another question, but they're going to make moves. I think that's obvious. But what I want to see in the meantime, and this is where the Houston series was disappointing on Saturday and Sunday, they need their bats to step up. Their offense, their lineup is intact, right? Okay, Jackson Holliday's on the IL, and we expect him to come back at some point in time. And, you know, they've had some guys with nagging injuries here and there for a few days, but their lineup's intact, and they have one of the best offenses in baseball. You know what I'd like to see? Understanding right now that Kyle Bradish, John Means, Tyler Wells, Danny Coulomb are not walking through that door. Coulomb until September, hopefully. Hopefully he's back by then. But they need their offense to step up a little bit. And that's what was disappointing. Look, Friday night, you get crushed. You give up that many runs, yeah, you're going to lose. But Saturday's game was winnable if their offense did something against Blanco. And Sunday, I mean, okay, they lost 8-1 and Suarez was bad. I get it. He gives up a four spot in the first inning, but they didn't punt. There wasn't much of a fight, even in that game. So for the short term, and I think this is what would buy Mike Elias some more time to figure out this market and to have some deals come to fruition. I think, you know, it's not, to me, it's not too much to ask your offense to carry the load a little bit more here over the next few weeks, until this pitching figures itself out. And the pitching's been excellent, right? Oh, by and large, it's been excellent considering where they've been and the injuries they've had. Keep in mind, Kyle Bradish, 8 starts all year. John Means pitched 4 times. Tyler Wells pitched 3 times. 15 starts between them. This team's rapidly, you know, they're at what, 77 games now. They're almost at the halfway point. They're not where they are because of those three pitchers, right? But where are they going to be, knowing that those three guys are not there to serve as reinforcements in
We're
the
hoping to
second
get
half of the
75
season?
starts out of those three guys,
I mean,
and they got
at least
15.
with Bradish and Means. I mean, again, for me, Wells was always going to be a bullpen guy if you're talking about your ideal scenario, which, hey, they need that too. So, but in the meantime, yeah, I don't think it's too much to ask this offense that, you know, might need to step up a little bit. And look, they've been the best offense in baseball, or one of the two or three best all year. So I'm not asking them to do something they haven't done all year, but as things are rocky and Albert Suarez, maybe he's turning back into the proverbial pumpkin. I don't know. We'll see about Cade Povich. You know, Dean Kramer, his last rehab start was not good, but I'm not saying that necessarily means anything, but you know, he's going to be coming back here, we assume. And what's that going to look like?
By the way, you're hilarious. He scored 17 runs on Thursday and he scored 11 runs on Friday. Scored 28 runs on
Well,
Thursday and Friday, and on Monday morning you're beating him up
no,
because they're
no,
not
no,
swinging
no. That's not what I. That's not what I'm saying. That's
the
not what I'm
bats.
saying. I'm saying as far as where they are right now, roster-wise, pitching-wise, this might be a time where you just have to lean on your offense to win you
When you
some games.
score
And
one
look,
run, you're going to lose every night.
yeah, I mean, unless you pitch a shutout, right?
I'm
I
just
mean, that
saying,
can
they
happen.
scored one, and then they scored. They didn't hit the ball in a couple of games. They're going to lose. You
Right,
score one run, you're going to lose.
and even Friday night, I mean, they scored a bunch of runs late, and look, they showed some fight and all that, but you know, they were behind, what was it, 14-3, I think it was. And I'm not even beating them up. Again, this series is baseball. I'm not nearly as worked up about this series as a lot of people are. I'm just not.
Well, you can't. It's June. We don't get
Yeah,
worked up either way. In the
exactly.
same way, we didn't
But
sit here and do 8 hours of live radio on Friday morning pronouncing them world champions because they took two out of
exactly.
three against the Yankees.
Exactly. So this weekend humbled them. It humbled them. It was ugly. I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it. It was a
People
lousy
are looking for
series.
Chris Davis to pitch on Fridays. You know what I mean? Come on.
But I think what we need to see, and what I think you'll probably see, because like I said, I'm not asking them to do anything they haven't done all year. Maybe they do need to win a few more games, 7-6 over the next few weeks until they figure out this pitching piece. Because, yeah, they need at least one starter. And to me, they need two bullpen arms. And one of those bullpen arms needs to be a guy that can pitch the eighth and ninth inning. You know, as I've said to you, I'd like to see them come out of the trade deadline with a scenario where they have two closers, basically Craig Kimbrel and someone else who's fully capable of doing it. Cause I still think Craig Kimbrel's limited in terms of what you really truly need in a closer pitching in October. You know, I'd like to see a 1-1A scenario, you know, which Andrew Miller, you know, a decade ago was kind of could have been that guy if Zach Britton wasn't so great, right? I mean, Andrew Miller could have closed some games for them and did different things for them. So, you know, that's my only point. And, you know, they last couple of days of this series, they didn't pitch particularly well. Although, you know, Burns, you know, I didn't think he was lousy by any means. It was just not typical Burns, you know, made a couple bad pitches and or mediocre pitches, and it cost him really, you know, more than it normally would probably. But, you know, Sunday they didn't pitch well. And they didn't swing the bats on Saturday and Sunday. They got swept. Turn the page, get ready to play. Hopefully they got a good night's rest, you know, coming back. And because you got to be ready. Cleveland's good. I mean, and Cleveland can really pitch. So my last point that I was talking about with this offense, good test going up against a really good pitching staff in Cleveland. I mean, they've allowed fewer runs than the Orioles. They've allowed fewer runs than the Yankees. You know, they're statistically speaking, the best pitching staff in the American League. So,
and I remember they were dealing Bieber to us, right, back in the day. John Martin was trying to convince me of that before he got hurt. We're going to do that. Cleveland's in town. Luke and I are going to talk some Cleveland Guardians. I'm going to try not to use the I word. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery have us out at Pappas in Parkville on Tuesday. I mean, it said 2 to 5, but I'm probably going to be there from like noon till 6 because I got guests coming out of my ears on Tuesday. We'll be giving away the Gold Rush Sevens Doublers with the top prizes, $10,000. We did have a $20 winner at Coco's 2 weeks ago. We also had a $20 winner at Cooper's. We were there as well. Last week had a good time at Costas. Luke and I gathered. Jessica Vallis gathered with us. Chris Emery from the Bay was our guest. And this week you will hear Greg Hawks of the Cars. You'll also hear Mark Bryan from Hootie and the Blowfish. They're playing up in Hershey on Friday. So a little bit of rock and roll. We had people jumping in the harbor this weekend. Crazy stuff going on. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions keeping our water cleaner here than the Inner Harbor so I can drink it. I'm going to be checking in with some people that were jumping in the harbor. I saw them all on LinkedIn. My pal John Brothers from T-Row was one of those people. Mr. Splash was one of those. I don't know Mr. Splash, but Mr. Splash was one of those people too. I think he has a real name. It's sort of like Captain Chesapeake at this point. And also our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare. We're back out on the road. We are not doing the show at Fadley's on Friday, but it's a great place to grab a crab cake and a beer and make sure you don't sleep on that mac and cheese when you're there, as well as a shrimp salad. Pretty good too. At the new Lexington Market. We'll be back there on the 12th of July for the New York Yankees, who are coming in, and we hurt their feelings last week, and now the Orioles have their feelings hurt, at least until Cleveland gets here. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. We got plenty of baseball all week. Stay with us. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.